You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Content warning. Nerdbliss is intended for a mature audience.
This episode contains spoilers for The Mandalorian, Seasons 1 and 2.
The Star Wars live-action series. It's the white whale of Star Wars fans since the beginning of Star Wars itself. There was a holiday special, which we don't talk about. There were a couple of Ewok movies, which we also don't talk about. From this, it's easy to conclude that Star Wars, as George Lucas and Lucasfilm envisioned it, needed to meet a certain standard. And the bar set by the original three movies was really high. For a live-action series to be true to Star Wars, the costumes, actors, music, and all-important special effects were going to cost a lot of money. For this reason, and probably a few others, Star Wars just couldn't seem to find its break to make it to the small screen. On the animation side of things, from 1985 to 1987, we had two Saturday morning cartoons on the ABC network, Ewoks and Droids. After that, we didn't see anything Star Wars on television until 2003 with the Clone Wars microseries. Disney acquired Lucasfilm and the rights to Star Wars in 2012. Fast forward to November of 2019 with the debut of Disney Plus. To stand out from myriad streaming services on the market, Disney played its ace in the hole. The time for our Star Wars live-action television series had finally arrived.
This is the way on this episode of Nerdbliss.
Strike wing, standing by the launch.
Connect, interlocked.
Dial turret
connected.
Reactor attacked in power.
All stations.
Ready.
Nerdbliss
is now online.
Hello and welcome to episode 135 of Nerdbliss. If you have any Beskar, go ahead and take that straight to the armor and be sure to reserve some for the foundlings. Before we introduce you to the contributors to this episode, I wanted to remind you that if you would like to be a contributor to a Nerdbliss episode, we definitely want to hear from you. Just contact us, let us know who you are and what you would like to discuss. And you may do that by leaving us a comment on our Facebook page. You can find us on the handle at NerdblissPod. You can comment on this post on our website at NerdblissPodcast.com. You can reach out to us through the ESO Network. They are ESONetwork.com. And so many other ways. We have an email address, NerdblissPod@gmail.com. Again, we'd love to hear from you and we'd love to have you on the show, hopefully. So, without any further ado, much like we did for episode 134, we had some guest contributors to this episode, and we're going to introduce you to them right now.
Hello, Nerdbliss Universe. I am Sexy Thor, sometimes known as Adam Whetston, co-host of the podcast Thunder Talk, the variety show from Hell with one L, and The Ring of Thunder, my one-man wrestling show. I've been a big Star Wars fan since before I could remember. My mom already owned the VHSs of the trilogy and made sure it was ingrained in me long before the special editions came out. It's stuck with me since and continues to enhance my life to this day.
Hello, JT Wheatley here, your friendly neighborhood host from the History of Comic Books podcast, and I'm here joining you in the Nerdbliss podcast to talk about The Mandalorian. And a quick connection, I've been a Star Wars fan my entire life, and I actually remember seeing Return of the Jedi in theaters when I was about 4 years old.
Hey, Chris, Tina, Pete, whoever else happens to be there, this is John Rasmussen, of Revelator Solo Side Project, Black Market Toast podcast, and the secret underground leader of Team Bagel. my earliest Star Wars memory is walking into The Empire Strikes Back in the theater as the AT-ATs were walking across Hoth towards the Rebel base left quite an impression on me, where I still remember that to this day. And it's just kind of gone from there.
Hello, I'm Nathan Laws. I'm the host of the 42 Cast, which is your ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything. It's a show where I and a rotating group of guests talk about any topic in genre fiction each week. I'm also the host of Time Streams, which is a podcast where my friend Juliet and I are watching all of Doctor Who from the beginning to now. I've been a fan of Star Wars from as far back as I can remember. We had a VHS tape of A New Hope that my dad had copied for us from a friend. And in kindergarten, every day when I came home from school, I used to ask my mom to watch Star Wars. And then one day she said, "We're all Star Warsed out," because it was all I ever wanted to watch. I had the different action figures that I still own a lot of, even though some of them are missing arms and, you know, the paints come off of them and you can hardly tell what character it's supposed to be. And my kids play with those now, so, you know, that's really cool.
Before we do our deep dive into The Mandalorian, you may recall that a standalone Star Wars movie, a la Rogue One and Solo, was in the works that would center around Boba Fett. By October 2018, it was confirmed that the project was canceled. The disappointing box office performance of Solo, A Star Wars Story, was largely believed to have been the reason for this decision, and it was very likely a major factor. But it might not have been the only factor. In 2017, while working on the remake of Disney's The Lion King, Jon Favreau reportedly pitched an idea for a Star Wars series to Lucasfilm president Kathleen Kennedy. He was asked to discuss the idea with Dave Filoni, the showrunner for the Clone Wars animated series and Star Wars Rebels. In March 2018, Lucasfilm announced that the unnamed series was in development, with Favreau as the writer and executive producer. On October 3rd of 2018, it was announced that the series would be titled The Mandalorian. Curiously, around the same time, the cancellation of the Boba Fett movie was confirmed. Coincidence? No one knows. The story follows the exploits of a bounty hunter, making his way and his living in the galaxy. Our Mandalorian takes on a job that is off the books. He is tasked with recovering an asset for the Empire. An asset which turns out to be a child. And not just any child. This child would be known for over a year as Baby Yoda. The Mandalorian initially keeps his agreement with the client, delivers the child, and claims his reward, which is a substantial amount of Beskar, the rare and valuable metal that is used to forge Mandalorian armor. After a while, the Mandalorian thinks better of his decision and rescues the child. From this point forward, the story revolves around the Mandalorian and the child evading the Empire and living life on the run. Favreau and Filoni did an amazing job capturing the look and feel of the original trilogy while adding new elements at the same time. More than anything else that Disney had added to the Star Wars universe to date, The Mandalorian felt like Star Wars.
The Mandalorian is Lone Wolf and Cub for Americans. For those who aren't familiar, Lone Wolf and Cub is an anime and live-action miniseries from Japan. It's about a samurai who's been disowned by his lord, so he has to work as an assassin. And because his wife is dead, he has to take his son with him. So there's this imagery of the baby carriage that also contains all these weapons that he pulls out and uses to attack. And you can see where I'm going from that and how that relates to The Mandalorian. I know they looked back to samurai films for inspiration, just like George Lucas did. And I just really feel it so strongly when watching this show. I mean, everything from Mando's stoic demeanor as the protagonist to the wiping cuts, it's all just kind of like reminding me of all the different samurai films that I've watched, and it's all great.
And those first two episodes kill you when you see little Grogu in his little stroller, that floating stroller, which is the coolest thing ever. Reach out to me, go like, okay. how they keep this secret, and two, why is he so cute? And you just immediately love the whole character. You love the world it was in. You love the character of Mando, wonderfully played by Pedro Pascal, even though he wears the helmet the whole, well, practically the whole season.
The Mandalorian is the start of a new era of Star Wars to me, which almost feels silly for me to claim since the sequel trilogy started in 2015. But when you think about a lot of things outside of Star Wars that are different than they were in 2015, it doesn't seem so silly. Also, when you consider this is the closest we've been in quite a while from shying away from the overexposed Skywalkers, that ending definitely gets a pass, though. And all the stories we know we can expect in the coming years, thanks to all the mind-melting announcements that was Disney Investors Day, it's like a new phase, to make that MCU comparison.
It is really bringing the Filoni-verse, the Clone Wars Rebels storylines, into the live-action fold, and we see that kind of play out throughout Season 2. There's a little bit of it in Season 1, but even more in Season 2, and that's the highlight of it for me is seeing these things being brought in.
We're going to take a quick break to tell you about a few other fine podcasts here on the ESO Network. When we return, we'll hear from Team Nerd Bliss.
More positive than a New Day pancake. More fun than a super kick party. It's the Wrestling Podcast from the host, who is the hammer-swinging, burrito-eating, well, you know the rest, of Thunder Talk, Sexy Thor! It's the Ring of Thunder, found in the Thunderverse and among the great podcasts of the ESO Network.
Hi, I'm Juliet.
And I'm Nathan.
Experience Doctor Who from the very beginning through a classic fan's eyes.
And through the eyes of a new Who fan.
Reminisce and relive those classic moments with Nathan as he offers fun insight.
Or experience them for the first time with Juliet as she dwells on social issues, history, fashion, and the size of a flashlight.
We're the Time Streams Podcast.
Find us on Spotify, Stitcher, or Apple Podcasts.
I'm Brittany Trudeau.
I'm Martha Bartlett.
And this is But First, Let's Talk Nerdy. Clink.
Oh, how was that? That's going to be our promo.
Done. Cut it, Kevin. Send it.
Bam.
But First, Let's Talk Nerdy. It's two nerd girls talking about nerdy things over a couple of drinks. What could go wrong? Part of the ESO Network.
Nerdless. I believe this is our first session in 2021. Am I correct?
It is.
Be correct.
It is.
All right. Well, happy New Year.
Happy New yes. President.
We are recording on January 24th. Needless to say, a whole lot of stuff happened since the last time we recorded as far as current events.
I know it's the first one in a while with all the hosts present.
I was going to get to that as well. I wanted to take a moment to welcome Eric back for the first time in God, I don't know how long. So welcome back, Eric. Glad to have you.
Full capacity, Eric.
Yes.
It's very, very enjoyable to be able to participate again, both hardware-wise and health-wise.
Excellent. Excellent.
Nice.
And we are also joined by Colton again. Now, you would have heard Colton previously if you're one of our Patreon subscribers, but he's going to be a main guest host on this episode. So welcome back, Colton.
Hello.
Somebody wake up Colton.
I say thank you for that.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad Colton could make it, because this is one of the shows that this is, you know, he and I do have our little our shows, and this one is definitely one of those, and probably, you know, Book of Boba Fett and the other ones will probably also follow with that. So we'll have, you know, he can contribute to some of these very, very well.
Now, before we dive too deep, I want to remind our audience that we did talk about The Mandalorian in some previous episodes. They focused intensely on season one because that's all we had at the time. And those are episodes 123 and 124. If you want to go back and listen to those, we're going to touch, we're probably going to touch on some of that material here. But we're going to cover obviously season two. We just finished season two in a blaze of glory, a blaze of Jedi glory.
I do like the fact that a lot of our contributors were able to go through and offer some very, very unique insight individually. I don't think I really heard a whole lot of repetition, which is nice, because that's one of the things I was wanting to try to avoid myself, because I didn't want to just jump in, because I got so many things I could talk about. I even, for the first time, I did written notes so that I don't get off too much topic, because I just had so much going on in my head. And Colton got to preview some of the topics we were going to discuss too. So, I think we've got a lot to cover.
Yeah, I've got the questions that I sent out for the interviews. The first thing that I sent out to everybody, I just said, The Mandalorian is, and just had them describe the show in their own words. Not necessarily a word-for-word synopsis, but like what it means to you, what it is to you. So let's go there. We had a lot of descriptions or comparisons to Wolf and Cub, a samurai story, which I am not familiar with, but I am now, sort of.
So, well, yeah, and so many episodes also went into separate. I mean, it's not just one thing. That's what's so cool about it. It's like it's hard to peg it down as one thing. And I like that.
I think we can agree that it is probably the best thing to happen to Star Wars. I'm not going to give it a fixed point, but we'll just say in a while. How do we feel about that? It's comparing The Mandalorian to our more recent Star Wars entries.
I think personally, it shares something with Rogue One, which is, when you ask that question, the immediate answer that came to my mind was it gives a different perspective on, you know, an old favorite. It makes it new without reinventing the wheel, so to speak. And right. I liked the fact that it, not only in terms of the actual look and grittiness of it, it felt like an old Star Wars movie. It felt like the original trilogy, which obviously brought up all these nostalgic feelings for me, much like Rogue One did. I mean, Rogue One felt like it was happening, you know, alongside Episode 4. I honestly feel this show really does feel like it is just taking place right outside the few years after Jedi. And I thought, okay, this is where it really shines, is the fact that it feels like Star Wars more than a lot of things. I think that's one of the things that people complained about the prequels, which, again, we won't go down the rabbit hole of toxic fandom and the folks that the prequels suck, and anything Disney's ever put a finger on sucks. That's all BS. And they all have something you can like about them. I don't care who you are. And if you say otherwise, you're a liar, and I will tell you to your face. But what The Mandalorian does get right is that element of the spaghetti Western meets the samurai, which is exactly what the original trilogy was. And all the other movies have kind of expanded upon that in some way. Like Solo was kind of a buddy cop movie. You know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah, that's the first thing that I think of, is that it's because it's kind of a coming of age slash discovering of a purpose. You know, I don't want to say like Lethal Weapon or something. You know, but it gives you this kind of feeling of personal growth. Whereas in Rogue One was kind of a mission based movie with some personal elements to it. But The Mandalorian scopes out the original trilogy. Like, there's a lot of different stuff going on, and a lot of these different mini story arcs happening within this bigger story. And I think it captures that and keeps it going very well, I think.
As someone that kind of had to watch it over just a few years because I wasn't around during the time it was actually like originally released, it feels like way cooler just because it kind of adds to something I got to see a lot quicker than a lot of other people got to see, because I got to see the original trilogy. Like, I could watch the whole original trilogy right now, whereas back when it first like started coming out, you would have to wait a little while to be able to watch the next one. And it just feels so cool to be able to now look back at all of that and look back at all of the newer stuff and just see how well it connects together while also like adding new things and kind of aging, but also keeping the old stuff in it.
I was very casual in my Star Wars fandom. I still consider it to, I mean, of course I freaking love Star Wars. Like, but I've never really delved into the extended universe. I've never really watched the cartoons. I haven't seen episodes 2 and 3. That is someday going to happen and be part of content for this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I love about The Mandalorian is it really stands on its own. And, you know, I've never really gotten into samurai stuff. So even though, like, I can see the parallels and, like, I respect what spaghetti westerns are, but my dad really loves The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and I hate it. So those kind of things do not feel like a good thing to me. But one thing that, and I will always compare all episodic television to the A-Team butt. It's because it is that he's going from one place to the other. Mission is hiding. So you have, there's kind of a grand 80s tradition of shows that you're MacGyvers, you're Highway to Heavens, you're like, yes, that it's like the people going from one place to another, solving problems, hiding from whoever the big bad is. And there's a lot of storytelling potential. And having the main character being someone of great honor and ethics is very cool. Like, he is, I think, truly a, well, I mean, I guess the fact that he will kill people for money is a little anti-hero-y, but it's also, you know, he's going to do the right thing to the best of his ability in any situation.
He is what we would call in Dungeons and Dragons a lawful neutral. Like, he's working for who he works for, but he has a very strict code.
Right, and he gives, and as we saw in even in the first episode, he gives you the option. You can come in warm or cold. Yeah. And, you know, so that proves exactly what she said. And actually, you know, what's funny is, that's one of the things I put on there is that it makes good as a standalone in my notes, that you don't have to even have much intimate knowledge of any other aspect of Star Wars for it to pick up and be a good story to begin with.
It's like a great reintroduction or new introduction of Star Wars. And season one particularly is very good at that. It doesn't, all of our fan service, well, not all of it, but much of our fan service is in season two when folks are already on board. I think that was a good move. I'm not sure if that was planned or if that was, can we please see more of other stuff? I don't know.
I have a theory. I think that I think the fan service actually was ramped up as kind of a thank you. And mm-hmm. Thank you for making this a success. Thank you for subscribing to this service. Thank you for believing in it. here's some stuff, and we'll get into it later, the wide range of things, but here are the things that we know, some of the stuff that you guys want to see really, really badly, so we're going to put this in here for you. But we're going to do it in a story, in a way that it makes sense in the story.
So we've had Disney Plus for just over a year now, right? Mm-hmm. All right, and I'm just going to go ahead and say that Chapter 16 is worth a year plus payments into the Disney Plus service. But we'll talk about that ending.
IG-11 was amazing. The only IG I really knew was IG-88 with all his shenanigans and Shadows of the Empire on top of the Empire Strikes Back appearance, so to see this IG with such depth is cool to see. Plus, Taika Waititi is always wonderful, so there's that. It's always cool to see Carl Weathers, so Greef Karga is a good one. I took an instant liking to Mando because I knew we had quite the journey ahead discovering what he's about while he also goes about doing badass things, which I guess is what you would hope from the titular character.
Mando is a samurai warrior. I really love the minimalism in his performance. So every movement that he makes, every word that he says, all of it just has so much weight to it because of how he just restrains his performance like that. And again, it is so similar to how samurai films do it and what samurai characters are like, you know, because it's that same sort of stoicism that's baked into the idea of the Japanese hero. The client is so incredibly creepy. It's like we veered into a horror movie for a moment. We don't know much about the character, so there's really not a whole lot more to say about it, but yeah, I was just really struck by how creepy he was. Queel is the MVP of season one. The prosthetic for his face is really great, and it really improved on the appearance of the Ugnaughts from Empire Strikes Back. Nick Nolte gave him this gravitas, which doesn't seem to be right for an Ugnaught, but he just has it. And every time that he tells you that he has spoken, you just love it. And it's so weird, but you do. And I love the hints of backstory that you get where he talks about earning his freedom and all that. So really just a great character all the way around.
We hit on some season one stuff in the questions we sent to our respondents. Characters. I kind of like, especially in season two, we have... Because initially when I saw these characters in the first season and then we just kind of moved on, I'm like, okay, I guess are these throwaway characters or are they just, you know, just one time? But no, we pick up Greef Karga and Tina, a character that I know you're fond of, Pelimoto, showed up again.
Yeah.
I love her very much. And not just because I can close my eyes and pretend she's a pink kitty.
She's referring to, she's played by Amy Sedaris, who is the voice of Princess Carolyn on BoJack Horseman, another show that we have talked about on this show on a previous episode. But
yeah, I think personally, I think not only do, as we already mentioned, we get to see a Mandalorian who is pretty true to the code and who is still honorable. Above everything else, he has honor, he has a conscience, and I think that speaks loads about the character. But we also get to see, like you said, Greef Karga, who kind of is, I don't know, for me, I'm kind of glad he came around in that second, especially by the second season. You know, he's no longer kind of like cutthroat and it's all business for him. I think he actually genuinely has seen kind of the error of his own ways. And I think I like seeing him as a partner of the group. And I love, obviously, IG-11 in that first season. And I think Colton can agree with this. IG-11 was one of our favorite characters because, you know, we got to see previously, I mean, if you looked into the expanded universe version of IG-88, you realize, you know, there are multiple IG-88s. They're all sharing the same consciousness, and they're basically they're supposed to be these badass, diabolical, scary assassin droids turned bounty hunters. And you know, we didn't see that in the movies. I think somebody else had mentioned that he's kind of lame in the movie. I mean, he was literally a prop. He was literally a stand-up puppet with, you know, they might have a little part of the dome turning on top of his head or whatever, but that's it. This was the IG-88, much like a couple other characters we'll get to later, that we, this was like the IG-88 we always kind of saw when we read those books and read about, you know, him being this fearsome artificial life form. And we got to see from the time we saw IG-11 coming in there, guns a-blazing, head turning all different ways, arms all over the freaking place akimbo. That was the bomb. And so I'm glad we got to see that. We didn't see that coming. And I thought that was awesome. And I think Quill, in addition to what another comment was made about how it takes the Ugnaught appearance and makes it not only more lifelike, but more personable, more personality. But honestly, the character of that individual, he was definitely MVP of the first season. I think he tied with IG-11 for taking out the stormtroopers and stuff in that glorious fashion.
Yeah. Love me some Quill. Love that Nick Nolte turned in a really good performance for that character. I missed Quill when I was very, very sad to see us lose him.
That death was really like, it was just, I did not expect it at first, because I was expecting Quill to be one of those characters to be like, look like he's not much and like survive longer than you expect them to. And seeing him just like, you know, get gunned down in the first season, and after doing like really cool things, it's kind of sad because you expect them to, because at first you kind of expect them to be a little bit more of an important character after those first couple episodes he was in.
And yeah, it's amazing how the two of the ones who did some of the most heroic stuff were the first ones to be gone.
And he didn't really want to get involved in that. That's also, you know, more the tragedy of his character. But yeah, we've definitely talked about Quill before. So yeah, lots of good stuff from trying to see where should we go. We didn't see much of the we didn't see any of the armorer or the covert in season two. Now, that was one of the areas that I kind of expected to see something, you know, give us some idea of where the armorer or the covert is, even if we don't see them directly, throw us a hint or something. And I feel like they didn't mention it at all, which, of course, it'll come up in future episodes. But in a way, I kind of felt like, yeah, they kind of forgot it or brushed it aside.
Well, keep in mind, too, that I think the pacing of the second season was a little quicker, wasn't it? I mean, it seemed like the things that were happening quicker back to back than in the first season. And I got the impression that the time span of season two was much more condensed than the previous season. And so it's like almost there might not have been enough time to cram them in there. It makes the story make any sense. So I'd be very, very shocked if we did not see either the armorer herself, and we might not see like the whole huge, you know, clan of Mandos that like we had in the covert before, but we may actually at least have the armorer and a few survivors or some folks that she's picked up along the way. And I still think there'll be, and I think somehow or another that'll tie back into our other Mandalorians that we got to meet in or re-meet in season two.
And also, there's going to be a reckoning there because He has removed his helmet. You know, is he going to? I would think that being the person he is, he will reveal that to the armorer next time he sees her. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes down.
He's also going to have some questions about what he has learned about how the rest of the Mandalorians, like he's been taught this one belief system as the way, and not everyone that is legitimately a Mandalorian lives that way. I'm really interested to see where they go with that.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if the armorer knew of that the whole time, or if she was she another one of those stalwart, this is the way, you don't take off your helmet people, or was she just respectful of his particular flavor as being one of the ones that do not show their face? Maybe for all we know, they could have been in hiding so long that they were unaware that she might be a little older than we think. And for all we know, this is something that she's just not, or who knows? It may be like when you think of religion in our world, there are some that won't eat pork, but others that don't think it's a big deal. It might be something of that nature. It might just be a different sort of denomination or different like offshoot group. And that's the only thing I can think of.
Well, and another thing to kind of step outside of the box where that is concerned, there were some notions that the reason they went the way they did in season two is because they, whether it was, Pedro Pascal not wanting to wear the helmet all the time, or if for narrative reasons they couldn't sustain the whole I can't remove my helmet thing, that they brought in Bo-Katan to say, Mandalorians take their helmets off all the time. What are you talking about?
I have a skincare routine that I need to accomplish. And yeah.
Yeah, the Mandalorian needs to moisturize. Yeah. It's hot under there.
My favorite mid-season character probably has to be Zero the Droid. It was Moss from the IT Crowd. It was Moss from the IT Crowd as a droid, and I spent the entire episode just grinning about that fact.
The armorer, I think, was my favorite of the first season outside of Pedro Pascal. It's like how cool she was, how dedicated she was to her craft, and her fight scene, it was so awesome and cool.
Cara Dune, I already knew, was full of badassery, but I didn't expect the whole Alderaan thing. But that definitely brought some good depth to her character. To say she's got an eternal bone to pick with the Empire is an understatement. With Fennec Shand, it just seemed natural to finally get Ming-Na Wen in the Star Wars universe after Mulan and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and we're all the better for it.
The Armorer and Cara Dune were amazing. I really love that the series has put women in such prominent roles to be these badass characters, but they don't make a big deal about it. They just let the characters get on with being badasses and no one questions it. And Cara especially stood out for me with how physically impressive she is, combined with the Alderaanian backstory. So yeah, I really appreciated that. Kind of the same thing with Fennec Shand. I love Ming-Na Wen. She's kind of the cavalry in any storyline that she's in, where she's the person that you can just rely on to, come in and help you, overturn some situation or whatever. And again, awesome character. Not quite badass in the same way of the Armorer and Cara Dune, because she's not quite as physically imposing, but awesome in the fact that she's just this highly skilled woman, awesome warrior, fighter type person. So definitely appreciated that as well. Pelimoto is fun. I love how she took care of Baby Yoda and how she has such an affinity for him. That was really cute. The crew were a lot of fun. You knew having Mando be part of the team like that, it was going to go south, and they had a diverse enough set of personalities that you were constantly wondering how it would go down. And for me, especially having Clancy Brown as a Deveronian was a particular highlight. Just that voice coming from that kind of face just seemed perfect. And so, yeah, no, I really liked that. I liked that episode.
I will say Cara Dune remains a trooper, and I mean that both in the figurative and literal sense. I still think she's one of my favorite characters on that show, just as being a doll and just completely just an immeasurable badass. I believe I loved, I think it's already been mentioned, seeing Clancy Brown as a Deveronian. That was awesome. Bill Burr as Mayfeld was just ridiculously cool. Bill has always been sort of a controversial character himself in real life because, you know, he's one of those very middle of the road, very to the point, no BS kind of guys.
Yeah.
And he kind of carried that over into his character in Star Wars. And I like the fact that, as we'll probably talk about, he got brought back into the season two.
Oh yeah. In a big way.
In fact, absolutely. And in fact, I think the whole crew in the prison break episode was the only members of that crew were the characters I thought were unnecessary were actually the Twi'leks themselves, who should have been the focus, but they were like the least interesting and least, I think they were the least personable of all of them. And, I thought that I'm glad to see Bill Burr back, and I think we'll see him again, honestly, because of the way he was released at the end of that episode.
Yeah, the prisoner chapter 6, I believe it was, that is a favorite of mine as well. I do think we're going to see I think at least one of those Twi'leks is going to survive, because they set I forget the woman's name, the character name.
Xion or something like that.
Something like that. I feel like they were kind of setting her up as like this show's Harley Quinn, if that makes any sense. But also, and this, I know we've talked about this before, but I have to say it again. Richard Ayoade as the droid Moss from the IT Crowd.
Yes.
Well, and I love the fact that he got to come back as a voice again in the...
Yes, I forgot about that. Not expecting that.
I don't think we're going to be seeing much more of him, but after what happened to our ship. But I thought that was really cool if they were able to bring him back in. I still think the story, one of the things you mentioned were the biker scouts. I still think, I know some people really think it's maybe too slapstick for Star Wars, but you know, we can't assume that everything in that universe is glum and it's so harsh. We have to kind of, even though they deserve to get thrown around by IG-11 for punching Grogu,
right?
But much like the Tag and Bink comics, it's like that levity is almost kind of a welcome air within this dark story. So I think it's necessary, and I honestly would almost like to see them come back beaten up, maybe a little skittish, maybe not quite as jokey, a little more careful with your words.
Yeah, I would like to see that as well. And the fan response to that was, they hit Baby Yoda. I can't forgive them. Okay, that's the point, guys. What bothered me about the reaction to that was when I would say, oh my gosh, that was great. That was funny. That was good material. They held that against the entire sketch, against the entire concept. They hit Baby Yoda. I can't like that. Come on, guys. That was the point. You're supposed to dislike them, okay?
Right.
And they got their comeuppance.
Yep.
Be honest.
Yeah, it's like Mary Poppins droid, just like, don't mess with my baby.
Exactly. I think too, I think Colton and I can agree that one of the coolest episodes, I think, was in that finale of season one, where the baby's rescued, IG-11 makes it back, they're all pinned down, and obviously Din Djarin's name is revealed, and he's sitting there wounded, and him taking off his mask and having IG-11 doctor him back to health was, I'm sorry, that got to me a little bit too, because assassin droids aren't supposed to be like that, but he was, and it was damn sweet. And then of course he sacrifices himself not long after that. So I thought, that to me made the finale like a really it was a tearjerker many times. And I thought that was a really well written episode for that.
Yeah, the priming we've had both in Star Wars and just generally as science fiction fans for caring about artificial life forms and you know, thinking of them as people really made that so meaningful. And, you know, it's not less than an organic being sacrificing themselves.
Like, Colton, hold up what's sitting on your desk right there. You're one of your favorite Star Wars characters of all time.
Okay.
Hold up a little higher. K2SO from Rogue One.
He's like, he went to Juilliard.
Yeah, we love us some KTS. We've got the big one. I want to say he's, what, he's 18 or something inches.
Right up there. Yeah. Yeah, he's got it on his shelf. That's one of the ones that he and I agree. We were like, man, we hated to see him die. We knew it had to happen, but what a heroic way to go. Yeah, that's one thing that Disney has really brought us. And I think maybe it's because when we go back and look at who was there throughout the entire saga, R2-D2 and C-3PO, and we see those as characters. We don't see those as necessarily artificial life forms. They're just characters to us. And I think that's what's so cool about it. Disney's really taken it to the next level and gave them a heart, even more so than they already had. And I think that's.
I did want to add as a footnote to IG, if they do in fact share a consciousness, we just might see him again.
Well, that would be awesome, wouldn't it?
That would be really awesome.
Or if somehow something was salvaged that would allow us to have IG again.
Oh yeah, certainly.
Thumb drive.
Same thing. Yeah, same thing for I forget what the droid's name was that Richard Iotti played.
Q9,
something like that. Yeah, he could get reassembled too. Especially, I don't know. I think Richard Iotti would add so much personality to that show that I almost feel like they really are throwing money away if they don't.
Well, my friends, due to some production-related logistics, a decision was made mid-production to make this a two-part episode. So you are going to hear part two of our discussion of The Mandalorian in episode 136. Also, just as there was with Star Trek Lower Decks, there will be an epilogue for this episode in episode 137, where you will hear the complete and uncut responses from our four contributors. And you don't want to miss that. Please, please do not forget that we covet your feedback on this and any other episode. So please contact if you have any thoughts or comments you would like to make. Go ahead and feel free to leave a comment on this episode on our website, which is nerdblisspodcast.com. You can leave a comment on the social media post. And once again, we're on the social media outlets under the handle @nerdblisspod. You can call our call-in line, which always goes to voicemail. And that number is 864-715-9446. And we just love to hear from you. We like to hear from our listeners. Let us know what they like, what they don't. And helps us make a better podcast. Our theme song is a modified version of Hyperspace by Jens Kilstofta and is licensed to us for use by Machinima Sound. Thank you once again for listening to Nerd Bliss. Nerd Bliss is a part of the ESO Network and is a production of 4 Foot One Media. Play my promo.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Seriously, play my promo. Please.